Since 1931, Financial Executives International has been the leading advocate for the views of corporate financial management. Its more than 10,000 members hold policymaking positions as chief financial officers, chief accounting officers, controllers and treasurers at companies from every major industry. And FEI enhances its members' professional development through peer networking, career management services, conferences, research, and publications. Join FEI today to network with key influencers, understand emerging issues, advocate for corporate finance, and boost your career opportunities. Both individual and corporate membership options are available. Go to www.financialexecutives.org and click on Become a Member. Or look for the link in this episode's show notes.
Hi, this is Chris Westfall, and this is the FEI Weekly Podcast. With the recent decision by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission around carbon disclosure, it's important to look at the larger narrative of applying traditional financial valuation methods against natural systems. That's where natural capital accounting comes in. At its heart, natural capital accounting is a series of practices, including carbon disclosure, where environmental resources are measured against economic activity. It's not anything new, per se, but natural capital accounting is becoming part of a larger dialogue about government and private market policy. In this episode of the podcast, we speak with Professor Nicholas Mueller, the Lester and Judith Lave Professor of Economics, Engineering, and Public Policy at Carnegie Mellon University. Dr. Mueller's work focuses on the interaction of environment and economic policy, including the use of natural capital accounting.
I guess Professor Mueller and Dr. Mueller, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, a lot what we're discussing today around climate disclosure, environmental disclosures, is certainly pertinent and in the news, but I thought I'd start off a little bit about yourself, where you come from and what your focus is.
Sure, so I'm a professor of economics, engineering, and public policy at Carnegie Mellon in both the business school and one of the engineering departments called engineering and public policy. And I'm a microeconomist by training, and a lot of my prior research uses combined engineering and economic models to value, in a monetary sense, pollution emissions. And those valuation metrics are then useful in a couple ways, two of which I'll mention here. The first is when we think about designing policy that uses things like emission taxes or cap and trade, knowing what the value to society is of reducing those pollution, of those pollutants at the margin is helpful. So what's the per ton value of a ton of carbon or a ton of particulate matter can help us with policy design. The second is in account designing and estimating accounting systems that include the value of pollution emissions, and then relating those to various measures, either aggregate output like GDP or value added from industry, or all the way down to adjusting the value of a company based on its pollution emissions.
Great. And that's certainly what our listeners and our membership are focused on, especially around the sort of the debate around the valuation and disclosure of some of those metrics. But I wanted to start off with something that is a little more timely that's happening right now, and that's the recent SEC decision on carbon disclosures and how to approach that. Do you have any thoughts on that and what it is, if it advances sort of like what you're talking about in terms of economics?
So I think disclosure is an important first step. When you look back at the history of managing environmental externalities or the management of natural capital more broadly, one of the first steps is just measurement and measuring things in a rigorous way and in a standardized way so that comparisons can be made across time and across companies. You see that with local air pollution and setting up monitoring devices, which happened decades ago in the US and in other contexts as well. So from the perspective of the value of disclosure, I'd start there and say that it's a really important first step. In terms of how it interacts with natural capital accounting or broadly keeping track of our natural assets, including clean air and clean water, I would say it really helps us on the quantity side, but it doesn't necessarily help us on the valuation side. And I mean, by that, I mean, clearly disclosure, if it's done well, is going to inform investors or maybe regulators or the lay public in terms of the quantity of emissions that different companies are producing in a given period of time. In order to do extended environmental accounting or natural capital accounting, we also really need to know the monetary value of the pollutants that are being produced or emitted. And that research has been undertaken for a long time by economists for carbon dioxide and for local air pollutants. So that's proceeded apace in parallel, but it doesn't directly rely on, from the point of view of valuing a ton of carbon, it doesn't rely on things like improved disclosure. But the two work together such that the aggregate value of the emissions we tend to think of are the value of the marginal ton times the tonnage emitted. So if you improve the estimate of the tonnage emitted, you're going to do a better job in terms of estimating the aggregate value.
What do you say, because, you know, we're dealing a lot, you know, a lot of our members in the private market, and they're trying to understand what you're discussing, sort of the value of the metrics, whether they're addressing the issue that investors want to see and I guess the larger stakeholder community wants to see. How would you describe today's approach and quality of metrics in terms of measuring carbon emissions? And is that really being reflected in the disclosures right now or the quality of those disclosures?
So, my answer is similar, or in the same spirit as the answer to the previous question, and that is there's two tracks in terms of quality of metrics. Mm-hmm. One track is how well are we doing at just measuring what's being emitted, and by whom, by what countries or what companies. And the other is if we go to value those emissions and build them into an adjusted firm value or net market cap, or we aggregate up to an adjusted GDP measure, how well are we doing in terms of valuing the tons? So on the first side, there are aspects of measuring carbon emissions that are pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. If we can track aggregate fossil fuel flows through an economic system, we know the carbon content of those fuels. And so it's a pretty straightforward endeavor. But once we start to drill down into subunits, industries, and even more so firms, right, it gets much, much harder because of proprietary information, right, and the difficulty in linking firm activity to electricity demand or supply chain emissions. So that's where things get really, really tricky. So the disclosure step and the metrics that are associated with the disclosure steps are going to help when we drill all the way down to company firm level measurements, which is probably what's most relevant to the financial industry. It's less relevant to the sort of macro multilateral agreements and negotiations between countries, though it's an ingredient, but it's clearly less important there. But again, I think what matters most from the disclosure metric point of view is how we treat scope 3,
right,
supply chain metrics. And even maybe equally as important as measurement rigor is measurement standardization.
Mm-hmm.
So that when a firm reports or discloses something about its scope 3 emissions, it's comparable to another firm's reports or disclosures about its scope 3, and that it's comparable over time.
Right.
You know, from my perspective, scope 3 is a little bit tricky, just because if you add up all of a firm's emissions, inclusive of scope 3 and scope 2, and then you add up across firms, you're going to get a number that's way bigger than actual emissions.
Yeah.
Because you're double counting. And that's okay for the purposes of tracking firm impact, but there is a disconnect there in thinking about macro level progress measures. Mm. So I revert again to say that it's really standardization that matters to me, cross-sectionally and across time, to facilitate rigorous comparisons. On the valuation side, I'll be more brief and just say the standard metric for carbon emissions is what's called a social cost of carbon.
Right.
And this is the present value of the social cost from an emission today, or whenever the metric is being computed, that extend far into the future. And early estimates of those were done with highly aggregated macro growth models, the DICE models that Bill Nordhaus pioneered, Nobel Prize winner Bill Nordhaus pioneered. And they've progressed to include more highly resolved representations of damage in things like human health and agriculture and damage to physical assets along coasts and things like that. I would say that science has progressed quite a bit. However, there are still some structural uncertainties that are part of those calculations. So the metrics reflect those uncertainties, like the social discount rate and estimates of economic growth into the future that we can just never know. Mm. But again, that metric, the social cost of carbon, is the sort of the benchmark for valuation of carbon emissions. There's consensus among economists that it's the measure we should use. And we look at a range of values that are driven by different assumptions in terms of what damages we count and how we value cash flows differently across time.
So would you say that there's a lot more consensus at the sort of like economic policy level about the approach and measurement than, say, at the firm industry level? Or am I not phrasing it correctly?
No, that's an interesting question. So let me make sure I understand. So when firms think about valuing carbon emissions, mm. there's kind of two perspectives. There's external facing valuation. What is the price for, compliance, carbon in compliance right. markets, like the EU trading scheme? Then there might be internal measures. What's the value to a ton of carbon to us as a firm? And then the third one would be the social cost of carbon, which is what's the true metric of the social cost from an emission.
Right.
Do you, among those three, are you asking about consensus for any one in particular or just broadly?
Well, at the firm level, at the actual, measurement and disclosure at a Fortune 500 company, you know, that sort of thing. Does that question make sense?
So, yeah. So if we're talking about valuation measures, I guess what I'm saying is there's probably not a lot of consensus right. on anything that isn't driven by external, policy forces.
Right.
So whatever the price of a ton of carbon is in the EU ETS, that's what it is. And there would be consensus among firms that is the marginal cost to emissions in for firms that participate in or are regulated by that market.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of consensus for internal carbon pricing, I would just look to the CDP data,
right?
That sort of collects information on what internal carbon prices are for companies. And I've done that for my classes. And there's a range. It's not a huge range. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $150 a ton, basically, give or take. So that's not consensus, but I would also not call that a wildly divergent range. On the consensus about measurement of quantities, my sense is that there's an emerging consensus. You know, how we measure scope one is pretty straightforward, irrespective of whether you're a bank or, a cement manufacturer. You're just measuring physical emissions. Scope two is also pretty straightforward. It's a little bit tricky when you think about how electricity load for a firm triggers power generators, right? That's a tricky empirical step. But generally, the understanding of that there is an impact and that local or regional power grids drive that impact is agreed upon. Again, we come to scope three. And what I would say is there's divergence among companies about what should or shouldn't be carried into scope three measurements. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that the SEC or other regulators are able to stipulate and standardize what goes into that measure, all the better.
Right.
Because again, that will induce or incentivize or force consensus on what gets measured and reported, and that's really, I don't speak for anybody when I say this, except to say that's what's most important from an accounting point of view is that we're dealing with a standardized metric.
Right.
And scope three, there's double counting all over the place. So scope three itself is not informative with respect to macro progress to climate goals. Mm-hmm. So there's no issue there. The issue is just if we're talking about firm level comparisons and intertemporal comparisons, just let's compare apples to apples.
Right. One thing I wanted to follow up on, and you've mentioned it a couple times earlier, is a term I keep seeing more often, and that's the concept of natural capital accounting. And my apologies, I'm not as familiar as others in this area. Could you just describe a little bit about natural accounting, capital accounting as a concept, and how it fits into the overall environmental economics system?
Yeah, the basic idea is that there are natural resources, across the world within a country that generate value, that generate services that may not be reflected in market transactions and therefore in our national income and product accounts. So things like GDP and value added, gross national product. Examples are things like estuaries, coastal resources, some dimensions of forests and fisheries. And the idea is behind natural capital accounting is to, number one, measure them. That is to say, acreage, tonnage, all the physical measures that we've talked about with respect to carbon emissions, have an analog in this sort of natural resource setting. And then number two, monetize the value of the services that these stocks of capital produce for the country or for the globe. And ultimately, to set up a system of measuring and tracking changes in the stocks. So are forests being cut down? Are they regrowing? And changes in the value of the services that they produce over time. That's the basic idea.
And if I understand correctly, if I understand correctly, there's a recent an administration proposal to, I guess, incorporate natural capital accounting into some of the policy decisions that's making, and that's brought out some critics of it. What are your response to critics of natural capital accounting? It's not entirely accurate, or the valuation methods aren't as robust as they should be.
Sure. So first thing I would say is indeed, you're correct. There was a major announcement, I believe it was a year ago, by the Biden administration Department of Commerce, which is responsible for the publish for publishing our sort of standard national income and product accounts, GDP and things like that. So it's natural that this system of accounts would occur within the scope of that federal agency. I can't speak to the specifics of that proposal just wasn't part of that process. I have colleagues who were, but it's a major advance in terms of what the federal government is intending to do in the context of natural capital accounting. On to the second point you raised, the sort of accuracy right. or reliability of the methods. The first thing I would say is it varies. When I was talking about natural capital a moment ago, I was referencing physical assets like coasts and trees and fish and things like this. And it's also important to recognize that part of natural capital accounting is valuing clean air and clean water. And that means valuing what we were talking about before, right. which is the flows of pollution that's going to ultimately degrade those stocks. In those areas, in particular, air pollution, you know, local traditional air pollutants and greenhouse gases, the valuation metrics have been around for a long time, and they've been subject to peer review. As I said, in the context of greenhouse gas accounting, there are still uncertainties. You know, it's just part of it. But we're aware of the uncertainties, and we're aware of how they influence the estimates. For other areas like valuation of species extinction and things like this, we have much less mature valuation metrics. And so there may be more structural uncertainties that we're unaware of or don't know how they influence the estimates that would be important to take into account. What I would also say, though, is those critics of these metrics would need to acknowledge that even our traditional national income and product accounts suffer from considerable uncertainties that they either ignore or are unaware of. So when we talk about inflation over the last year and a half, our measures of inflation are very imperfect. And this has been discussed and explored in the economics domain for decades. But we keep using the CPI and the PCE, even though there are serious shortcomings, both in terms of how they track quality change in products over time, and whether, in fact, they're representative of the goods and services that consumers, in fact, consume, and therefore are a good indication of how prices are changing. And if you think about the implications of bias in the CPI or the PCE, that they're incredibly broad for monetary and fiscal policy. So if one is going to criticize metrics associated with natural capital accounts, one also has to admit or accept that there are structural problems, shortcomings, or uncertainties associated with the traditional accounts as well.
Right, right. And so I guess my question is, you know, what do you see as a goal of natural capital accounting? Is it so the markets have a can actually apply a historic mechanism they're familiar with in the accounting paradigm, where they can put a valuation to things and they can say this is what this price is, so there's a market for it, so we can understand where I hope I'm going on, but what do you think the goal of natural capital accounting is?
So I think there are many. I would highlight two, and I would sort of preface this by saying I'm going to be deliberately incremental. So, you know, emphasizing the practicality of things moving forward, I would say two things. From a firm perspective, and let's say firm, not bank, not investment right. bank, not a financial actor, let's say a manufacturer, right? Natural capital accounting, let's further limit this or just make it more concrete by saying keeping track of CO2 emissions. It's going to disclosure and setting up and establishing the system is going to facilitate implementation by those firms, because they're going to have a clearer sense of what the rules are, what the goals are, And we know from the long history of management science that when we measure stuff, we manage it.
Right, right.
And so the nice part about natural capital accounting is it establishes a system, and part of that system is just measurement and keeping track. And firms then have a clearer message about how to do that, and they can do so and move forward. On the other side of the ledger are markets. And by this, I mean specifically financial markets. And I would then include asset managers and investment banks and all the folks who are paying attention to these new performance metrics. I would say that the natural capital accounting structures and disclosure and measurement gives these market participants far better information to base asset allocation decisions, investment decisions, and ultimately to move capital towards more productive uses, where productivity is defined as being inclusive of impacts on, say, pollution or natural resource assets. So there's an implementation side, and then there's an information side.
Right.
And it's putting those two things together that I think shows or argues that natural capital accounting is a really important step.
And so I have sort of a final question for you, and that's sort of like a broader thought of, obviously you're teaching this every day. There seems to be a lot of acceptance among the new generation of accounting professionals and students on these different methods. Do you think that's true? Is there sort of a generational process to thinking about, applying valuation methods to carbon or natural accounting capital, or, do you think that as time goes by, it'll just become more ensconced in the way things are done?
I would say a couple things. The MBAs that I teach recognize that part of doing business now and moving forward is to be aware of these issues. It's just part of it. And as a function of that, they are very interested in learning about what's rigorous, what's not, how to incorporate, how to measure, and ultimately how to strategize and be an entrepreneur in that context. So some part of it is just pragmatic, right? Financial markets and markets for goods and services are now heavily influenced by these topics. And so if I'm going to be involved in the business community, I need to know about them. So please tell me. The other part of it, though, is that, I would just say the increasing obviousness of the impacts of human activity on the natural environment has imbued the younger generations with the recognition of this connection between what we do and what the impacts are. And as a result of that, some fraction of that generation is concerned to the point where they want to change the trajectory of things. And to do that, there's a recognition that we need to measure, we need to keep track. If I'm, quantitatively oriented with respect to how I think about the world, then I need some sort of measurement system to make decisions on. And they recognize the importance of the natural capital accounting systems to make informed choices in that domain.